Discover nature by design for a beautiful view. Snows knows how to make it all easy for you. When it comes to landscaping and gardening, who knows how to create the perfect scene? Snow knows Garden Center.
Snow's Garden Center. And good morning and welcome to the Snow Nose Garden Show. We are the longest continuously running garden show in the United States, sitting in front of the golden microphones here in the WINA studios. Good morning. It is a beautiful Saturday morning if you get up and at them early before the heat and humidity set in for another blistering, hot, humid day in Central Virginia, folks.
Humidity's supposed to drop back a little bit later on today.
We came out of a movie last night at 9:45, and it felt like I was walking into a sauna. Down in the downtown mall. It was, yeah. And then we were heading north, going home, and we passed the billboard with the time and temperature date, you know, flashing billboard, 90 degrees at like 10 p.m. I was like, are you kidding me? A week ago, I was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I had a hoodie on, and it was 65 degrees at night with no humidity, and I was shivering. Oh, what a difference a week can make, huh? And 2,000 miles.
Yep.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning on the Snow Nose Garden Show. I'm Corbin Snow.
And I'm Norm Carlson.
And we're here for the next hour to take your gardening questions and answer your phone calls. This show is brought to you by Snow's Garden Center, conveniently located at 1875 Avon Street, just south of the city of Charlottesville. And we're also sponsored by one of my favorite little places in Charlottesville, Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A, and did you know Chick-fil-A is serving breakfast, Norman?
Yes, I did.
Have you ever had their breakfast?
Yes, I have.
Okay, my favorite breakfast, if you're driving on 29 right now, are the Chicken Minis. They are these little delicious, handmade, homemade little rolls that taste like my mom's dinner rolls that she makes. Literally, and they glaze them with like a little sweet little butter.
Something.
Yeah, something. I don't know what it is. This little magical topping. And they put one of their little juicy, tender little chicken nuggets in there. And then I take some of that honey roasted barbecue sauce and just put a little dab on there. And oh my goodness, that is finger
money
licking good. Not to steal another quote from another chicken franchise out there back in the 80s, but that's the first thing that came to my mind. So thank you to Chick-fil-A. Swing by and grab yourself a Chicken Mini at Chick-fil-A this morning, the official breakfast sandwich and restaurant of the Snow Nose Garden Show. Let's go to the phone lines. Maybe we can give away some Chicken Minis on the show next week. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Garden Show. Hello, good morning. Is their mic on, Glenn? There, I can hear. Good morning.
Hello, yes.
Hi, good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Garden Show. How can we help you?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. First is, my Catani asters have some white fuzzy stuff on the stems.
Probably some woolly aphids.
Yeah.
Like, insect that
it like looks a little like bright white, little fuzzy white cotton.
Yeah.
Little like.
Yeah, there's actually an insect up underneath all of that fuzz and cotton. It looks almost more like a mold or a fungus or something, but if you get poking around in there, there is an insect that's underneath all that fuzzy coating. And they attach themselves to the stem and suck on the juices out of the plant. Usually don't do a tremendous amount of damage, but can transmit other diseases and things like that. And if they're left unchecked, they can certainly weaken the plant and make it susceptible to other issues out there as well.
And so how do I treat that?
Good news is aphids are usually pretty easy to control. Most of your garden sprays will take care of it on the kind of organic side, pyrethrin based. insecticide will do a great job on them, or you know, some of the more conventional things like the Bonide systemic insect control, and
do most of the controls work systemically, or are there any contact sprays?
Both. The pyrethrin based sprays are more of a contact, and the 8 is another good contact spray, and the Bonide systemic insect control is actually absorbed through the leaves and works systemically. So as the insect feeds, it is absorbed into the insect and kills it as more of a stomach poison.
If I just spray just the white part, would I be killing most of them? You know, in other words, instead of spraying the whole, I've got tons of these things, tons of bushes.
Yeah, you can go through and hit just the individual insects. The one thing that I would caution you with there is it's very easy for them to be kind of hidden and secluded up in other areas that you might not see. So a lot of times in a scenario like that, it's best to just go ahead and spray the whole plant and make sure that you're getting all of them, so that you know, you're not missing a bunch of them, because it's very, very, very easy to do.
Are they very laying that mess. White stuff? Is that how's that?
What's that?
The white matter that they're under, is that their nest, or is that their eggs? Or?
No, it's actually a hairy, fuzzy coating that they have on their as part of their exoskeleton.
Oh, so there's like a million of them all sitting together like a party?
Party in your plants, yeah. Man. And some of those products are available in like the ready to use in hose in attachable sprayers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just one that you can hook up to your hose and kind of drench, you know, all the cotoneaster instead of having to go out there and individually hand pump or hand spray. It'd be a lot quicker, easier application for you.
And then they come back like a week later and have to spray again and then spray again.
It probably would not be a bad idea to go ahead and repeat it. The good thing about aphids is they're fairly easy to kill. The downside is they reproduce so quickly that it's easy for a few of them to survive and the population build up again fairly quickly. So a second application is definitely beneficial.
Do they go on other things?
They can, yeah.
And then my dogwoods, I've always had this young dogwoods when I planted it a couple of years ago that they look like fall, they're turning red. But I've also had the leaves where when the new leaves come out, they're all crinkly and rolled up and white looking.
Yeah, if they've got kind of a grayish or almost a milky cast to the leaf, yeah. That's an indication you've got some powdery mildew on there, which is a fungal disease, which typically we didn't think was that serious a problem. And, you know, the plant is going to lose its leaves here in another couple of months, and you break them up, get rid of them, and problem over with, you would think. But it's an issue that does come back year after year, left untreated. And some of the research has found that it actually can drastically reduce the ability of the plant to generate and sustain a root system, so that long term, you end up with a lot of root loss on the plant, which then makes it that much weaker and unhealthy and susceptible to borers and everything else. And if we have a sustained period of dry weather, then it's going to have a hard time sustaining itself. Plus, it's going to be much more slower growing. Is it going to bloom as well? It's just going to, you know, not perform very well in the landscape. So while we used to think that, you know, treating powdery mildew on things like dogwoods was, not that big an issue, it turns out it really is.
And is it too late for them this year? Or?
No, you can, the problem can be taken care of, and the plant will be much healthier, but it'll still look like it's there. In other words, you spray it and treat it, and it'll kill off the fungus, but you still have that.
It's not going to change the way the leaves look for this season.
Right. But it will stop. It will prevent any further damage, and you know, the plant will be able to recover and be healthier for it.
And what you can do next year is right after they flower, when that leaf is starting to come out, spray them with a product like Funganil, which is a fungicide, and that will help control them for next season.
Okay. And then turning red early, and is that a different, like, rusty red color?
That's probably more a function of, again, in a reduced root system and the stress of being a relatively newly planted tree. I take it these are probably getting a fair amount of sun.
Yeah. More than I thought they were going to get.
Yeah, I think that's probably what's going on there. It's if you get the powdery mildew cleared up and can keep it cleared up for next season, I think you'll gradually start to see, as the tree establishes itself and can get past that mildew infection, I think you'll see that early season reddening diminishes year after year until eventually it's not an issue anymore.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Great questions.
Sure. Okay. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, you really don't think of dogwoods as being a difficult tree to grow just because they're native here. And when you think of dogwoods, it's our state tree and flower. And, oh, man, I'll just go out and grow a dogwood. But, you know, you really do have to be careful about the selection of where you place them. They do tend to like a little bit of shade.
Mm-hmm.
They can tolerate some full sun, but they just don't seem to thrive or do as well when they're in full blasting heat, you know, all day long.
Right, and if you think about how they grow in the wild.
In the native here.
They're an understory tree that kind of grow at the forest fringe where they do get a lot of protection from the direct sun. And that helps them to, especially in the early establishment phase, to really do a lot better. They don't have to deal with that hot blazing sun all the time, and then that's naturally where they want to grow.
And then a lot of the ones that you see around town, you know, specifically on like the 250 bypass, as you're, you know, driving that Memorial Parkway by McIntyre Park, you know, they're older, more mature dogwood trees that, you know, look beautiful now, but I'm sure for a long period of time they suffered just like the last callers did.
And if you look at some of the newer planted ones along there, you know, they struggle and scratch and claw for the first few years till they really get established.
If you'd like to join the show, our number here in the WNA studio is 977-1070. Let's go back to the phone lines. Go ahead, Norman.
Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Gardening Show.
Well, good morning, guys. Listen, you're always so expert in your advice, but I've got a really tough question for you about gardening and weeding.
Okay. All right, let me get Google ready. 1 second.
All right. Are you ready for this one?
Yeah.
I know you're always right on with it, so I'm sure you can handle this one. What sort of a spray could we use to control the gridlock in Congress over debt limits?
Roundup.
Oh, that's it. You got it. Actually, it's a related question, but more gardening. You see crabgrass this time of year because of the dryness and everything, and it's starting to crop up, and I'm seeing in some of the different products out there, some say crabgrass control, and others say crabgrass killer. Is the control effective at all?
It is.
Or is there a killer?
And most of those products are going to have very, very similar active ingredients in them. A lot of them are actually going to be the same. The crabgrass control that we've known and used for years and years and years was actually taken off the market a couple of years ago by the EPA. And the product that kind of has taken its place that is now what you see in a lot of these crabgrass control and crabgrass killer products, if you actually look at the active ingredients, most of them are going to be exactly the same stuff. And it's more of a nomenclature, just
Norman, one of the things I'm seeing, though, is that, you know, they'll list, hey, we control 200 or 300 or 25 different kinds of weeds. But then when you look at the list, in most of the products, crabgrass is not mentioned.
That's in a lot of your broadleaf control products.
Right.
So, you know.
But then you see broadleaf control products with crabgrass.
Yeah, you do.
Control.
Yep.
Right.
But that doesn't say killer. So I'm wondering, is it really going to kill it?
It should.
But
probably requires maybe more applications to really get it under control.
It may. The other thing that you run into too, particularly with these post-emergent crabgrass products, is that they typically will take a couple of applications to get the plant right. killed off. And
that's why they call it control, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, that can present a little bit more of a challenge to get them under, to get it actually killed off than some of the easier to control weeds that we have. Anytime you're trying to control a grassy weed in a grass environment, you have to be a little bit delicate in how you do it. And some of obviously if you use Roundup, it's gonna kill it off very easily, but it's gonna take off all of the desirable right. turf as well. And
usually the crabgrass comes back first.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
yeah.
And that's one of the issues that you have. There's a lot of, you know, we can go into a pretty long discussion on why crabgrass thrives so well in the heat of the summer and why it comes back and why some of the pre-emergence might not make it all the way through the season and things like that. But really the key to good crabgrass control and management is that there are tons of crabgrass seeds out there in the environment, and they blow in from everywhere. And
right.
even, especially if you've had a turf area that's been turf for a long time and maybe has not been managed real well during some seasons, the population of crabgrass seed in the soil can be pretty high. And as a result, it becomes rather difficult to completely eradicate or kill it off totally and completely. So it is, from that standpoint, it's more of a control. Anyhow, you're just trying to control the population for this season, knowing you're going to have to do it again next year. So it's,
well, is it true that they took off the market the diazinon for Congress control?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's,
can't buy that. I wish we could buy something to get that gridlock out of there. Huh?
I tell you what, whatever your political leanings, this whole thing is not good. But hopefully, the optimist in me says that they'll. Put their collective heads together and get some kind of something put together by the first of the week. But the pessimist in me says, "Don't hold your breath."
Let's hope and pray if pray is still allowed.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. Hey, have a great day.
Bye.
Bye. You can always count on him for a good call. You know.
That's right.
Let's go to line number. I think one was holding first. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Garden Show.
Good morning, and thank you for being on. I always learn a lot. Now, the last caller about crabgrass, that was very entertaining, and I would like to invite him to be a part of the Jefferson Area Tea Party because he sounds like he is of like minds of ours. His sense of humor is first and foremost required at the Tea Party, and then someone who really cares about the country, so I hope he's still listening. The thing that I'm realizing about crabgrass and people in crabgrass is we don't really know what crabgrass is because I think a lot of us have wire grass, and we're dumbfounded. Nothing happens with wire grass.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, so if you could help me identify whether I have crabgrass or wire grass, and I suspect it's wire grass, and then tell me what the heck to do about it, that would be helpful.
Wonderful question.
I'll let the phone down and let you answer that question.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Wonderful question. Thanks for calling.
The big difference between crabgrass and wiregrass, and the reason why it's easy to control one and very difficult to control the other, is wiregrass is a perennial, meaning it comes back, you know, that plant, it lives from season to season.
Right.
Whereas crabgrass is an annual. At the end of the season, once frost hits it, it's dead, done, over with. But has lots of seeds that come back for the following season. As far as identification, wiregrass, the name is very descriptive. And if you go in there and pull up or try to pull up some of the wiregrass, you'll find these long stems that run along the surface or just below the surface of the soil that root every so often along there. And it is literally like coat hanger wire.
Yeah. And you just keep pulling it and pulling it, and it's not like a clump that runs into the ground to a single plant like crabgrass.
Right.
Where you can, crabgrass, you can go in to selectively pull out a clump of grass. You're going to kind of just keep following this little string or this little, literally like almost like a little running sheet of wire through your lawn for several feet sometimes.
Right. And wiregrass tends to have almost a bluish green coloration to the leaves, mm-hmm. whereas crabgrass has almost more of a yellowish green
yeah.
look to it. And as you're saying, Corbin, it comes out, the crabgrass comes out as a almost like a rosette from a central point, and all of the blades come out of the center of it in one clump, whereas the wiregrass has these long runners that come off of it, and it spreads, and the leaves tend to be shorter and narrower.
Stringier. And crabgrass, I like to think of it, even though it's not a broadleaf weed, it's more of a broadleaf blade. You know, it's more of a bladed grass, you know, it's kind of like a fescue, right. Actually a little bit thicker than even fescue.
It is a very wide blade.
Very wide, broad grass blade. Blade of grass, whereas the wiregrass is very thin, not a lot of surface, you know,
right.
to the leaf.
Right, and crabgrass tends to grow very somewhat flat. It never gets more than just a couple of inches tall, maybe 3 inches, and then it'll obviously send up seed heads that get taller than that. But the grass plant itself stays rather low, whereas wiregrass, if it's left unmowed, will get relatively tall.
Yeah.
And it seeds itself almost all summer long if it's left unmowed, whereas crabgrass only really seeds at the end of the season.
And then one of the other big differences, when you're talking about control, there are crabgrass control. We were just talking about crabgrass killers, and those are selective products, whereas you can go in, make an application, kill out the crabgrass, and your regular fescue, your lawn is fine, whereas there is no good selective control for wiregrass, meaning the only real way to keep it at bay, to control it, to kill it, is with a non-selective herbicide like Roundup.
Right. You end up having to go in, spray the entire area where you've got the wiregrass infestation, kill all of that off completely dead, even the desirable grass, and then start from scratch. There's nothing that you can spray that will kill only the wiregrass and leave the tall fescue. So it becomes much more challenging to eradicate and to keep that area clean. Whereas with the crabgrass, there are selective products that you can use that'll kill off the established plants, and pre-emergence that you can use in the spring that'll keep the seed from germinating and keep it from being an issue in the first place.
And we could talk about this for the next half hour of the show. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Snow Nose Garden Show on AM 1070 WINA. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Snow Nose Garden Show, the most listened to weekend talk radio show in Central Virginia, live each and every Saturday morning since the spring of 1950. Now in its third generation, this is the Snow Nose Garden Show, and thank you so much for joining us. It's only 80 degrees, low humidity. It's going to be a beautiful day to get out and play in the garden. And to incentivize you to get out and play in the garden, we have a special going on at the Garden Center today. This is for Facebook and Twitter followers only, which right now between the two, we have a little over 1,000 people that are either friends or followers of ours. If you want to join up real quick, you can. Just go to facebook.com/Snow's Garden Center. That's facebook.com/Snow's Garden Center. Sign up today, and you can be updated on all of our specials and things going on at the Garden Center. Landscaping service and gardening maintenance services. But today, for all of our Facebook and Twitter followers and friends, you get 20% off any one single item at the Garden Center. That can be on a $200 piece of furniture. It can be on a $300 tree. It can be on any one single item that you want. You can just buy a yard of mulch and get 20% off. So hopefully you get the picture. Sign up today, facebook.com/snowsgardencenter. Our phone lines are wide open. We cleared the phone lines as we went to break. If you'd like to join our conversation, if you have a gardening questions, anything happening out there in the garden, give us a call at 977-1070. Phone lines are wide open. We'd love for you to call in.
Anything we can give some additional clarification to on crabgrass and wiregrass?
And wiregrass, yeah. We're actually approaching a really good time. If you have a wiregrass issue or problem, you know, you could take advantage of some of these really hot, warmer days to go out and spray some of the products like Roundup or Brush Be Gone or some of these products where you're trying to eliminate or kill grass or brush. It does really well in these extreme heat.
That's right. It works great when we've got
the hotter it is,
like
the more intense it burns and gets rid of things. Even the product, the organic product Burnout, is more effective and does a better job this time of year. And you do it this time of year because, you know, especially wiregrass, you're going to want to spray the grass at least twice. And I would err on the side of caution and say maybe even a third time. You want to make sure that, you know, you have about a good month of spraying it to completely kill it off. Make sure you get the roots. Make sure everything has turned just nice and brown and it's killed off before you renovate, before you rototill, before you do any aerating, seeding, whatever your renovation project is in the fall. You want to make sure you have at least 3 to 4 weeks in between the time when you start to spray and then when you start to renovate.
Because heaven knows you don't want to have to do it again.
No, you don't. No.
And, you know, wiregrass can be pretty difficult to get killed off. Sometimes you can kill all of it in one spraying, but a lot of times it'll yellow out really bad, but there'll still be a little bit of green left in there. You think, well, that's close enough, and it is able to survive it and come on back. There's enough of the root system and everything still intact so that it keeps going. So it really is important to give yourself the opportunity to give yourself enough time to make sure that it really is good cold stone graveyard dead before you start
and
your
one
renovation.
Of the good things, you know, with a product like Roundup, you don't have to wait, you know, 3 to 4, 6 to 8 weeks after it's dead before you can go in and seed. You can seed, you know, after it's dead, you can go in a week or two. I mean, actually, even a couple of days later and seed. There's no residual herbicide in the ground that's going to prevent seed from germinating.
That's right.
So you know, you don't have to wait like 6 to 8 weeks like you do with some of the other herbicides like crabgrass and broadleaf control.
Right.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on the Snow Nose Garden Show. How are you today?
Good morning. How are y'all, gentlemen? I'm fine.
Wonderful. Thank you for calling.
I'm going to ask a question and then hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay.
I have got a severe problem of morning glories taking over my garden, my flower beds, and is there any way I can get rid of them next year before I plant? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Great. Wonderful call. Thank you for calling in. Have a good day.
And that can actually be a really, really nasty problem to control. There's a couple of different types of morning glories that are out there. One is the kind that we, you know, typically plant as an annual flower. It comes up, gets the nice big multicolored flowers on it, and can actually be very, very ornamental, but also very invasive. And then there's another smaller leaf, smaller, lower growing, smaller bloomed white flowering variety that's more in the weed category called field bindweed. And it grows and looks just like a morning glory. It's in the morning glory family and can be a very, very difficult weed to control, difficult to eradicate, grows in these thick mats over top of everything, kind of reminiscent of kudzu, and very tough weed to pull out and all of that. It's going to be kind of a 2-3-pronged approach to keeping that stuff under control, whichever variety that you have. One is going to be to pull and remove as much of it as you possibly can now, and eliminate as many of the vines before they have a chance to flower as is possible. Because once they flower, they have the opportunity to set seed. And once that seed gets in there, that's a new plant that you've got to control for next season. So do as much as you can to eradicate that, you know, pull it, yank it out of there. If it's in areas that you can safely treat it, spray it with Roundup or Cleanup to kill it off, and just get as much of it out of there and prevent it from flowering and setting seed for next year. Prevent that as much as you possibly can. For next season, before you start to see them come up, after you've got any plants in the ground that you want to start from seed, and they've had a chance to come up and start growing, apply a pre-emergent product like Weed Screen to those areas, water it in real thoroughly. That will help to prevent any seed that did get through that's in the soil. That'll help to prevent that from growing and taking over and being a problem for next year. And then any that managed to escape, just you have to be real diligent. Go on a almost daily commando raid out there, and anything that's sticking its head up out of the soil, kill it before it has a chance to grow. And that will help to eradicate it. But it's going to be something that you have to be very diligent about, and really just be aggressive in control measures, because it can really wreak havoc in the garden very quickly.
I think one of the key things you mentioned was the importance of the pre-emergence. You know, getting a product like Weed Screen, preen down in the beds early before things start to really heat up and germinate. You can control some of those plants from seed before they even get a chance to get growing.
Right, and that's the easiest way to deal with it.
And I just want to remind people that a lot of those products, you know, the Weed Screen, things that you put down to control weeds, you know, typically we're making that first application in early spring, March, April. And a lot of its effectiveness kind of starts to wear off by June, July, especially this time of year, and you'll start to see weeds just really start taking off again. So just a reminder that now is a good time to go ahead and make a second application of that product to help keep some of that weed seed from germinating and starting to grow late season, which right now weeds are really doing a good job thriving and growing.
Yes, they are.
And just going bonkers out in the garden this time of year.
Right. Give all of those Treflan-based products like Weed Screen and Preen and some of the other ones that are out there on the market typically have about a 3 to 4 month window of effectiveness. Once you get past that, they're metabolized by the microorganisms in the soil. They've been broken down, and they're just not effective anymore. The product just wears out.
And I have a tendency to think, oh, I put my product down. It's just the fact that it's drier, it's hotter, and weeds are thriving, and I tend to just overlook and not think about the effectiveness of the product wearing off.
Right.
I tend to just think, hey, the weeds are winning at this point.
Yeah.
Where it's the exact opposite. You need to make another application to keep that in the ground so that the weeds don't continue to grow.
Right, because unfortunately they're not, you know, these are not season long controls. It's just like a 3 to 4 month, and the more rain we get, thinking back to April and first part of May,
June,
the faster it wears off. So, you know, when we get a lot of rain, it really reduces the window of effectiveness for a lot of these products.
Speaking of rain, how long has it been since you guys have had rain? Has it been a while? Or have we had a few good thunder bumpers through here lately?
It depends on where you are.
Real isolated.
Yeah. Like, for me, out at the house, last Saturday, I got just over an inch of rain.
Did you really?
And then about a half an inch again on Sunday.
Anything at the garden center?
But at the garden center on Saturday, we got more like between a half and a quarter.
Okay.
So we got some,
yeah.
But not a lot. And the same thing with Sunday. We got some, but not a lot.
And based on the way my plants looked when I got back from vacation, I would say we got none on the north side of town because they are hurting.
Yeah, there's some, but not much. And that's kind of how it's been. It's been very spotty. And, you know, it's a 30 to 40% chance of thundershowers this afternoon.
I saw that.
And then another chance about the same tomorrow, maybe a little bit maybe not quite as high, maybe closer to 20 to 30%. And then once we get past tomorrow, it's like zero for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, into next weekend. So let's hope we get some showers come through later on today. Otherwise, it's going to be a while.
Yeah. If you'd like to join the show, our number here is 977-1070. The phone lines are wide open. I'd like to remind people that coming up is the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA Critter Ball coming up this fall. And yours truly will be dancing in the competition, with one of the Dancing with the Stars, one of the local leaders, dancing with a professional dancer. And just want to remind people that I have a website set up where you can go online. The donation site is up and running from my website at CorbinRocks4Rover.com. CorbinRocks4Rover.com. And you can go on there and see some of the promotional videos we put together. You can meet my dance partner, Robin Grimsby, from Spin City Dance Studio in Orange, Virginia. You can also see the great work of our marketing company, Creative Juices Marketing, which Denise is just fabulous. She does so many wonderful things for our company and for me personally, and I'm really thankful for Denise. We'll have to have Denise on the show here in the next week or two to tell you a little bit more about her and what she does. But she is just overflowing with creative ideas, hence the name of her company, Creative Juices. She has every as we gardeners have green thumbs, she has a creative soul that just eludes creative juices from her body, and she is just fabulous. And you can check her out online as well, creativejuicesmarketing.com. But thankful for Denise and all she does to keep my blog updated, the website. She does a lot of – she's done all her marketing and advertising for our television and radio commercials and print, and was the one who created our new company logo. And anyways, just done a whole lot for our company. So I just want to thank her for all she does. Again, if you'd like to join the show, the number here is 977-1070. Wanted to talk just a little bit about watering. We were talking about the lack of water. And definitely, if you had planted any shrubs or trees, you know, this spring, it's time that you probably need just to keep a little close eye on them with the extreme temperatures we've been having and having it be just a little bit on the dry side. You definitely want to get out and do some supplemental watering. I planted some shrubs about 6-7 weeks ago, watered them in real thoroughly, you know, for the first 3 or 4 weeks. Got them semi-established, but they're definitely starting to show signs of stress. And, you know, if you're not careful, a lot of those shrubs that you planted earlier in the season, you can lose them real fast this time of year.
That's right. And it's really important to keep an eye on things. And when we say keep an eye on things, more keep a finger on things. You know, pull the mulch back at the base of the plant, feel down in the soil, and don't use necessarily just the visual cues of, you know, a wilting plant to say, oh, it needs water. Because a lot of especially more established plants, and the easiest one to see this with is some of the big leaf hydrangeas. You see them start wilting down in the afternoon. They've got plenty of moisture in the soil, but they're just losing so much out of the leaves because it's so hot in the afternoon that they wilt down, and you think, oh, it needs water, but you can end up overwatering.
Yeah.
And sometimes plants don't wilt. Not all plants wilt. You know, a great example of that is some of the hollies. The only way you know that visually that they need water is the leaves start to turn gray, and once they start to turn gray...
Uh-oh. Don't tell me they're going to die.
Yeah, it's almost too late at that point.
Mine aren't gray yet, but they are kind of like curling just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay. Can so I save them?
It's getting close.
Okay. That's our cue, dear. We need to go out on water tonight.
Yeah, so it really is important to, with a lot of the, particularly the broadleaf evergreens and things like that, as you're looking at whether to water or not, pull the mulch back from the base of the plant, stick your finger down in there in the soil, and feel how dry the soil is, because that's what's going to be the best indicator, is what the soil conditions actually are, rather than just looking at the plant and trying to see
visually.
And
the good thing is you don't need to be running out there every afternoon when you get home from work or in the evening or in the morning and drenching your plants and trees with water. You're still only looking at, you know, once a week, just going out there, give them a really good thorough soaking, and you're done. You know, it doesn't right. have to be, you know, even right now in these extreme, you know, hot temperatures, just once a week is all. Just go out and give them a good soaking. If you have containers or hanging baskets, it's going to be a little bit more frequently than that. But, you know, a lot of the shrubs, things in your planting beds once a week is going to be plenty.
And then typically we're talking about newly planted plants right. here, things that have been in the ground for 2, 3, 5, 10 years. The longer they're in the ground, the less additional watering that they
right.
need. One of the things that we talked about the other night at the LEAP seminar that I was a part of, most established plants around here don't need water. We think they need water,
right.
and we want to go out there and give them all this additional water. But our trees and shrubs, once they've been in the ground and have had a chance to root in and establish themselves.
Yeah, anything after like a year or two, I mean, they're good.
Right. They're fine. You know, there are exceptions to that.
Right.
Some of the perennials and
right.
things like that, the more soft tissued herbaceous material may need some additional watering. But typically your trees and shrubs, once they're in the ground for a couple of years, they've got enough of a root system with the soils that we have in this area and their ability to hold water almost too much sometimes, they're able to draw the moisture that they need out of the soil without a lot of help from us, unless we get into some real dire circumstances, which we really don't see that often. So,
okay, I've got a question. Have any of the listeners, or you, Norman, has anyone noticed an increase in the deer population and the deer just annihilating and eating everything this year? Or is it just me? They seem braver. They seem like they're grazing on everything in the garden. Even this time of year, typically they kind of take a vacation from my yard, you know, during the spring, well, late spring and summer months. But, I mean, I'm not kidding you. Every afternoon when I come home, they're standing in my neighbor's yard just going to town. They're eating. I've seen them just grazing on grass and things like that, where I've never seen them just out grazing in people's yards in the middle of the day. They just seem like there's more of them, and they're just getting braver and just, you know, more comfortable.
But typically, you think of this time of year as like you say, the time they kind of take a vacation from eating the stuff that we planted, because there's enough out there in the woods for them to forage and feed on. And with the kind of weather conditions we had earlier in the season, there's a lot of honeysuckle, there's a lot of wild rose,
oh, yeah.
all of those things that they love out there in the woods. But unfortunately, every year it seems like they get a little bit more, as these subdivisions become a little bit more established, they become a little bit more brazen. They don't hold as much fear of people because they've gotten used to us. And I think they like our buffet a little bit more than Mother Nature's.
Dang,
some of the
it.
Stuff that we've got out there, I think, is a little bit more tasty for them and a little easier to eat.
I'm not kidding. They're coming up to my front porch, my front patio, and they've eaten all the knockout roses. They've—I don't know if they've actually come up on the paver patio, but they've definitely gotten up to the edge where the mulch meets the paver patio, and they've eaten all the container flowers, all the good stuff they like out of the containers. They've annihilated my hydrangea. Ate all the flowers off. They're down to little stems. And again, when I was planting this stuff and some of the existing stuff, usually I don't do a lot of deer control this time of year because it isn't an issue. It isn't a problem.
Right.
But
you put out some new snacks. They had to come by and sample the new wing of the salad bar.
Jeez. All you can eat, huh?
It's like, you know, a new restaurant opens in town. Everybody wants to go check it out. They did the same thing. You put out a new...
I just have to start thinking like a deer, I guess.
And they are far craftier than we give them credit for. They're deer smart.
And the thing is, I know what I have to do to control them. It's just like, I just don't feel like I should have to deal with them this time of year.
Right.
So I'm mentally just having a hard time getting around that. But, you know, it is easy. There are some excellent products out there that you can use in the garden to control deer. But typically, we are only talking about those products in December and January when the deer are really an issue. around here. But just remember, some of my favorite are the Deer Whey is a great product. The
Deer Scram.
Deer Scram is an excellent product.
It's Liquid Fence.
Liquid Fence. I really love the Deer Scram. That became one of my favorite ones. But again, all of you regular listeners know the key is really to keep it real, keep it alternating as far as what you're using so that they don't get used to any one product or scent or taste. And you keep them on their toes.
That's right.
And at your neighbor's house.
Keep things mixed up, and that keeps them off balance, and they don't quite understand what's happening, and they don't have a chance to get used to it. A lot of the old-time remedies that people used to use, you know, putting hair out or hanging out fabric
does hair,
off your
does
sheets
hair
and
work?
Things like that.
Have you ever tried it?
Well,
I could give you a buzz, Norman. We could try it.
Oh, yeah. I got enough to take care of a little. Quite a few yards the way my hair grows. Ask Ed Shiflett. But hair works when you're out more in the remote areas where deer
right.
aren't that accustomed to having people around. One of the things that happens with a lot of those old traditional scent products, they worked because they reminded the deer of people and the presence of people and the fact that people can be predators to deer and all of that. But up in suburbia, in subdivision-type scenarios, particularly in areas like where you live that are very suburban anymore, they're used to those kinds of smells because they're around them all the time.
Right.
And hence, they don't work that well anymore.
Yeah.
So you got to go to something a little bit more exotic.
Well, I'm working on a secret recipe. I've been doing a few field trials at my house. You know, with four babies in the house, I've got lots of ammunition I can throw at them.
There
so we're experimenting with a few different controls here in the Snow household. I'll let you know how they go. Hey, we're just about out of time. Thank you so much for your phone calls this week. Thank you for joining us on the Snow Nose Garden Show. You can always listen to our show. They're archived at snownose.com or wina.com. You can also listen to them on cvillepodcast.com. And they're available for download for free on itunes.com, straight from your smartphone, from the internet. Check us out on iTunes under the Snow Nose Garden Show. I'd like to thank, once again, Chick-fil-A, our official breakfast sponsor of the Snow Nose Garden Show. I'm going to run and get me a chicken mini before the breakfast closed down at 10:30 this morning.
Ooh.
Not really. I'm going straight to ACAC to work out. But eventually I will make my way to Chick-fil-A. I love Chick-fil-A. Closed on Sunday, just like Snow's Garden Center closed on Sundays. But come out and see us today. Remember, all Facebook and Twitter fans, 20% off any one single item. Follow us at facebook.com/Snow's Garden Center. Also, follow us at CorbinRocks4Rover.com. Please support me and my campaign to win the Dancing with the Stars 2011 Critterball. Thank you so much for listening. We're out of time. We'll see you next week on the Snow Nose Garden Show.